He's Brayden Gall. I'm Jason Fitzjulian, Council producing Windy City intern, all chipmunked out back there. You can get to her at Twitter, at Windy City intern. Fresh off of having wisdom teeth removed, feel free to send her any gift gifts you have of chipmunks. Although she's not nearly as puffy-cheeked as most are after that. And kudos to her for still being in pain, but being here so the Julian Council can have the best day possible.
Have we reached the point where we don't have to call them gift gifts anymore? We can just call them what they're supposed to be called? Have we... We're on the air, what, like 9 months now?
Yeah.
10 months now?
I think that it's still a constant, you know. It's still a battle.
Or we should just start calling them GIFs, because that's what they're supposed to be, right?
That's what they're supposed to be called, yes.
According to the inventor, they're supposed to be called GIFs. Why don't we just start calling them GIFs?
And then force everybody to come
to ask questions and say, why are you calling them that? Or to join
that.
Us.
I love that.
And then I don't have to hear GIF GIF anymore.
That's fair. All right, we're going GIF. We are all in on GIF on this show, and that's just the way it's going to be. Here's the thing. A minute ago, we played you some audio from Jared and the GM yesterday where they explained how Vandy's going wrong in the way that they sort of invest in athletics, which is really a conversation follow-up to a fantastic moment they had with Jordan Rodgers a couple of days ago that was very sincere and honest, not just about the stadium, but about the investment in facilities and the investment in the athletic programs as a whole. Not just the stadium conversation, a whole athletic programs conversation. And Jordan made it very clear in his comments, it wasn't about the coach, it's about the administration. To all of this, I say that makes a ton of sense. But what we have to remember is who the target audience is for Vanderbilt. Because ultimately, I have a lot of experience around that school. I've got a lot of friends that have gone there. I've grown up with people that have gone there. My ex went there. Like, I've been around Vandy for a long time. I have a lot of love for the Vandy football program. I lived next door, in fact, for many years to a linebackers coach from Vandy, and he left me tickets every Saturday. I spent years going to Vanderbilt football games.
So you got some?
I got some free stuff! Yeah, I did. In the process, I feel like I've got a little bit of a feel for what matters to a lot of them. And in fact, I was talking to a friend of mine that works in the music business yesterday, a recent grad of Vandy, and saying, hey, where's the disconnect? And I realized that the disconnect isn't between Vandy and their fans, or the people that have come out of Vanderbilt. The disconnect is between all of us that are sitting here from the outside looking in. The smartest school in the SEC is doing the smartest thing. They are allowing their football team to be a part of the SEC. They're allowing themselves to be in a situation where they can get a ton of money. They can be a part of a high-profile entity. And they are essentially saying, we're going to invest in what's important to the kids that go here and the recent graduates and the alumni. And if that's not sports, that's okay.
Well, I think it is sports, but I think it's to what level do you want to invest in sports? Because we do see investment in baseball. We do see some investment in basketball.
What's
certainly
a good crowd size, though, for a baseball game?
Like 3,000 or 4,000, maybe 5,000. You got maybe 15,000 at Memorial Gym. I want to guess maybe it's smaller than that. But again, it's about the level of investment. And the level of investment for Alabama, A&M. I mean, A&M spent 400. How many times did we talk about this week in Hoover? You don't spend $500 million on football facilities to go 8-5. Well, Vanderbilt's not coming close to that. Now, they are investing some money, and that is a $3.5 million coach. I mean, they're paying their football coach like he's the most valuable employee at the university. I mean, they're paying him a lot of money. They built an indoor practice facility for a certain amount of money. They will build a new stadium, but it will be significantly less than any other stadium in the SEC. So I think your point is totally valid, that football guy out there, SEC fan, you know, Nashville resident, sees the rest of the SEC and Vanderbilt and says, well, Vanderbilt, you have billions of dollars in your endowment. Why don't you just spend the money and invest? They're investing at the proper level for what their fan base and their school should be investing, and that is a significantly lower level number than everybody else. It doesn't mean zero investment, but it means the right amount of investment. And to me, they've talked about a $50 to $80 million stadium, which they need on campus with high-tech luxury suites and facilities to fit 35,000 people. That's all they need. They don't need any more than that. And if they can accomplish that goal and compete and go 6-6 every year, that's what we've talked about with Vanderbilt as sort of the right level of reasonable expectation. If they're going to have tons of fans pouring billions of dollars into the athletic department, then their expectations go up. And then but what you need to see from that is attendance then going up. And you need to see passion and care and all the other stuff go up. And that's not going up right now. Even when they go 8 or 9 wins with James Franklin, he had to scratch and claw to get a full stadium, and they still didn't do it. It's still 37,000-38,000 seats. So there is a level of, do we invest in sports? The answer is no, but it's not all the way. It's not $0. There's a number there that's the right happy medium.
I think what Vanderbilt is doing is prioritizing what they think as an institution is important to the people that go there and the people that have graduated from there. And I'm going to turn around and again use Harvard as an example because they are they like to be in the conversation as the Harvard of the South, right? So when you look at it, yes, Harvard has basketball, football. Harvard has hockey. Harvard invests in sports to a certain level. And Harvard's quite content with their sports programs being whatever they may be. Vandy's sort of in that same level. So for all the people like Jared and in the conversation with Jared and the GM yesterday that are saying, well, they should just do this, you're not the audience. I don't get to go to Five Guys and say, hey, guys, I understand that you guys have hamburgers here, but what I really think you should have prime rib. Like, I don't get to make that decision. And at some point, Five Guys decides if they're going to have milkshakes based on whether or not their customers want milkshakes. I mean, that's ultimately what Vandy's doing.
Milkshakes.
Vandy's going in and saying, hey, you know, at some point, what serves our students and what serves our recent grads and what serves our endowment? And I think, frankly, to be as clear as possible, I think Vandy is absolutely accurately reflecting what's important to the kids that go there, have gone there, and give money to them. That's what they're doing.
I actually completely agree, and I do think because here's the deal, and this is what we always say. I think they're number 2 in the SEC in endowment. I want to say, I don't have the numbers in front of me, so you know if we can double check that. I want to say they're number 2 or 3 in endowment in the SEC. So they've got billions sitting there if they wanted to spend it on football. They don't. They choose not to. That's the point we're making here. If all of their people, alumni, fans, whatever, wanted a $200 million stadium and filled a $200 million stadium, there would be a $200 million stadium there. But they're not, and they're not going to, and because it's not a priority to them. It doesn't mean $0. It doesn't mean you sit in a dump over there on West End. You fix it, and you invest a little bit into it. And if you build a $80 million stadium that seats 35,000 people with really high-level luxury suites that increases the game day atmosphere, and then you go 6-6 every year and you're competitive on a week-in, week-out basis, I think you can have as good a Vanderbilt football program as they want it to be. And that's what I think it can be. If they want it to be 12-0, those very small percentage of the Vanderbilt fans that are like, I want to compete for national championships. Well, you're going to need to spend a lot more money, and you're going to need a lot more fans thinking the same way. And they don't think that way. So that's okay. That's their choice. But there is a level of investment, but not nearly to the same level as anybody else in the conference. And that's what their choice is.
And I think that at some point what we're trying to do is pound our cultural opinion of what Vandy should be into what Vanderbilt is. And I'll go back to when I was talking to a recent grad the other day, and the comment was, look, man, you know, I love football. I absolutely love football. But I had a huge workload at Vandy. So I had to make a decision. Was I going to go out Friday night and then go to a football game Saturday, and then go out Saturday night, and then on Sunday have to get the entire workload done? And frankly, I couldn't get enough of my friends to really care about going to the football game versus going out Friday or Saturday, so it sort of falls by the wayside because of the workload. That's part A. Part B, recent grad, season tickets, comes in and says, I can't find friends that want to go to games with me out of my recent grad friends. It's just not a passionate part of culture here. And I'm not saying that's everybody. I know that's one example. But I have a lot of the people I've interacted with there, they have priorities that are different. Saving the world and being doctors and lawyers and Indian chiefs, whatever it is. Like, there's a point there where I think that Vanderbilt's responsibility is not for us to tell them what their culture is and how they should invest in it. It's for them to represent their culture and community. And they're doing it. I'm all about it. If they want to put a new stadium on there, out there, if that's what they decide is best for their program. But at some point, we have to stop yelling at them about what we think is best. And we have to accept that the smartest school in the SEC is run by people that are smart enough to know what best represents, especially as a private school, not a public school, what best represents the kids and the people that are affiliated with their private school.
And it'll never be about the current enrolled students, because it's a very small student body population, and they are extremely busy, as you mentioned. They also take up if every single student went to the football game, they would still only take up like a sixth of the stadium.
Sure.
So it's about the alumni base. It's about the high level donors and boosters that generally at every school force these decisions. If a coach is getting fired at a college football program, it's because a lot of powerful boosters have come together and said, this is enough, we need a change. Or, hey, we love this guy, let's give him a huge raise, let's build a facility. Where are we getting that money from? Big seven-figure boosters. That's who runs college athletics, are the million, $10 million, $30 million, $40 million boosters. And those are the guys and men and women that run these programs. If the Vanderbilt Alumni Association came together and said, we want a $200 million stadium and we're going to fill it, they would get it.
Right.
But that's not what they want, and that's why their conversation is a $50 to $80 million stadium, which would still be by far the smallest and cheapest stadium in the SEC. The one thing we can all agree on is that it needs to be fixed, that current construction piece of whatever over there on West End needs to be fixed. It needs to be changed. And what that looks like, how much you invest in that, that is what Vanderbilt will decide, and it's not for us to tell them what to do with it. They can do whatever they want because they have the money. They're just going to decide what they want, and we sort of just need to appreciate it. And hopefully they have a good team. We can go watch good football games.
The future footnote to me on all of this is that the future millionaires and billionaires that are part of that endowment are, in all likelihood, current students.
Sure.
It'll be interesting to see what happens when a generation of kids that grew up with really relevant football during the James Franklin era become the future mm-hmm. millionaires. That is the mm-hmm. one thing that I think could change the level of commitment. But in the meantime, I'm going to stand up on my soapbox just like Hotcakes and Pot Pies does. I'm going to stand up on my soapbox and say, hey, we need to stop yelling at Vandy because ultimately Vandy's doing their job.
It's a singular pot pie, by the way.
Yeah, it is
hot
one pot
cakes,
pie.
Multiple cakes.
Hot cakes.
One pot pie.
One pot pie. Coming up next, SEC Media Days had a lot of highlights. There's a lot of good from that. We'll dive into some of those highlights. We'll tell you some of the best moments for us. We'll do all of that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5, The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. I thought we were going to get to SEC Media Day highlights, but the fact is, you guys are blowing up over this, and we'll let you chime in.
And so is Stillman.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Stillman came at me on Twitter. And say, can't believe how short-sighted I am.
Again, oh, my God.
I'll make my point that they're serving their audience appropriately. And he said, his comment, don't act like intellectuals don't enjoy their baseball championship. They were willing to pay James Franklin $5 million. I will tell you this. The smartest people I've ever known in my life also are really good at knowing when to hold them and knowing when to fold them. Being willing to pay a coach $5 million says, hey, I have an understood value of what this means to my school. $5 million for a coach, I'm okay with. That doesn't mean that anything – it's like being in an auction on eBay. You go into the auction, you're like, the most I'm going to spend today is $20. All right? The really smart people walk at $20. All right? The really smart economic people don't go over $20, even though you get emotionally invested. You're like, but $22 could get me this, and I really want it. No, it doesn't work that way. Smart, emotional people come in and say, hey, I looked at the spreadsheet. The football coach, I'm okay with $5 million for. That doesn't mean that they suddenly have to say, oh, and I'm also okay paying $10 million for this and $18 million for that. And that. Like, they don't have to nickel dime it. They can come in as smart football people or as smart people that love football and say, I got a max. My max number is this, and I don't care what happens. I'm not going over it.
Let's say their athletic department budget is $100 million, which is probably pretty close. It might be, you know, 60 or 70, but let's say it's about that. Let's say it's 100 because it's an easy number to do math in your head. If 10 or 12 or 15 million of that goes to baseball, let's say 20 or 30 of that goes to basketball, then you've got maybe 5 million for every other sport, and they've got a really good bowling team and a really good golf team and other programs. And then they've got 50 or 60, let's say, going to football. Let's use those as percentages, right? That's all fine and good, but their total number will always be less than everybody else's total number by choice. That's the difference. If they have the money to spend $485 million on a football facility, it's a stupid investment because they're not going to get a return on that investment. They're not going to start competing for SEC championships and selling out 80,000-seat stadiums. It's never going to happen. So that is where they are being smart about this. They've invested in basketball and baseball because they can pack those stadiums, be good at that sport for a significantly less amount of money. They cannot do that at football at the same level as the other programs.
I had a very successful songwriter buddy for a long time that had plenty of money in the bank. and he was constantly fixing up his old 80s piece of junk car. And I would go to him all the time and be like, dude, why? I know you have made seven figures this year. Why are you driving a piece of junk? And he's like, you know what? Car I drive is not important to me. I don't want to spend money on it. I can't fault him for that. We'll let you guys chime in. Wayne in Nashville calling in. Wayne, what do you got, bud?
Hey, guys. You know what? I agree with a lot of what you say. Let me give you a little background, okay? I had season tickets. Was a member of the Commodore Club for over 30 years, okay? I stopped. And I stopped for the very reason you're talking about. You are exactly right. Vanderbilt is doing what they think is best to appease to their current students and their alumni. The problem is, that's why Vanderbilt is so isolated from the community. That's why there are not sidewalk fans out there. I mean, I have lots of friends that have had season tickets to Vanderbilt that stopped for these very reasons. If it's their choice that they're going to appease their alumni and their current students, they're always going to be what they are. Until they do something to embrace this community, nothing they do is going to change. I'm not saying build a $500 million stadium, but these brilliant people that you're talking about are the same ones who have let the current stadium basically over 40 years not be touched to get to the point that it's at. Would you agree with that?
To some degree, yeah. Wayne. My question, though, and we appreciate the call, Wayne. My question, though, is like, how is Vanderbilt not woven into the community? That's where, like, I'm on a board of – here. This is a good point. I'm on a board of a charity with some Vanderbilt people that are on this board of this charity. They're all in the medical profession because it's all about taking care of sexually abused children. So it's they're all part of the community. They're just maybe not a part of the football community.
Right. And I don't
they're all definitely Vanderbilt's interwoven. We have a massive hospital industry because of Vanderbilt. Like, it's interwoven into the community. Has the athletic department done that? Maybe that's a question we can discuss.
And I don't think, frankly, the athletic department cares about that. I mean, I think that's the bigger point to this. And I don't think they have to. That's one of the big differences. Tennessee is a state school, right? Vanderbilt is not. It's a private school. At some point, a private school can decide that it wants to live isolated and just sort of be on its own island. I think Vandy's good with that.
And I just don't – isolated feels like such a strong
it
term.
Does.
Like, their West End is growing up around Vanderbilt. Like, I don't know. I just don't see – I see so many – I see more Vanderbilt fans in general, and maybe it's just because my circles of people are all sports fans. Like, I hang out with almost all exclusively sports fans. But and I get that I'm sort of one tiny cross-section of the population. I'm the football guy, right, in this conversation. And I am the sidewalk fan. Like, I'm the guy who used to buy tickets to games just – like Thursday night, I went last to the South Carolina Vanderbilt game last season to open the game. I go every Thursday night when they have an opener. Now, I work on Saturdays, so I don't always get to go to games. But – I go every Thursday night they've got a game. I was at the beginning of the Temple game, and then 4.5 hours later the delay happened and I had to go home. But like, I'm the sidewalk fan that goes for those games, and it was a lot more fun when they were better, certainly. And I think Derek Mason getting better is a big part of this conversation. Like, that can't be overlooked. They were bad the last couple of years, and they came down so fast from James Franklin that to see him sort of build it back up slowly, I think, is a really big conversation point in this. Like, if Derek Mason continues to go 7-5 every year, and all of a sudden they have 3 or 4 consecutive bowl seasons, maybe we need to start having another discussion about what should the next level be for Vanderbilt. Should Vanderbilt people start asking for another level? And maybe that's a conversation, but that's not this conversation. That's the next one.
I also think, again, every school has a right to pick what's important to them. And I'll use Belmont as a great example. The best music business program probably in the country belongs to Belmont. All right, it could belong to Vandy. Vandy had, for years, Blair School of Music was a far better music school than anything Belmont could offer. But Vandy decided that wasn't important to him. And in fact, for years, Vandy didn't even have music business classes. Like, they didn't even care about it. And
they don't have a sports journalism department. They don't have a journalism department. They don't have that degree.
And for the fact that there are some great music teachers at Vanderbilt, but they don't put the money in to promote their program the way Belmont does. And if you want to work at a record label, you don't go to Nashville, or you don't go to Vandy. You go to Belmont.
Right.
And you fight with all the Belmont majors to be a literally, they have a commercial music major at Belmont that's just teaching you how to be the next Faith Hill. Like, that's a major you can take. Belmont decided that was important to them. And I'm not going to fault
them. Teaching that class? It's
fantastic for them. You know, one of the guys we toured with was a music major that came in so prepared because of Belmont to actually tour on the road. Like that, they decided that was going to be important to them. Do I get to sit here with Vandy now and say, "Oh my God, why are you not investing in this? You should be the best music business school. You have the resources, you have the funds, you can advertise, you have the connections. You could outspend everybody. You could outspend Belmont. You could squish them. You could be the best music business program in Nashville." We don't do that. But for some reason, we feel like we get to do that when it comes to football, and we don't. For them to come in and decide they want to pay a coach a certain amount, that's their right. For them to say, "Hey, we want to invest a little bit," that's their right. For them to also say, "We're only going to dip our toe in it, and this is the max value we want to put on sports," that's also their right. And we're not their target audience.
And they have done some of that in football. They built the indoor practice facility. They've adjusted the McGugan Center. They have paid their coach very well in the last 5 to 10 years. So they are making investments. They're just making they're risk averse, right? Like, that's what they are. Like, when you go to a financial broker and you go, "Hey, I want to invest this amount of money," what's the first question he's going to ask you? "Well, what level of risk are you comfortable with?" Right? Like, that's what they're going to ask you. Are you okay with lots of risk and lots of reward? Or are you a little bit more conservative on how you want to invest things? Well, that's the way Vanderbilt is with football. They're a little bit more conservative. They're more aggressive on baseball and basketball because it's cheaper. It's more affordable. Belmont basketball. You can be good at basketball at Belmont. You cannot be good at football at Belmont. You cannot compete with the big dogs. So Vanderbilt gets the benefit of being in the SEC by investing $3.5 million in a coach, $40 or $50 million in facilities, and $80 million into a stadium. That pales in comparison to whatever every other program in the SEC is investing in terms of dollars and cents. When you look at $400 million facilities and $500 million facilities, that they are investing at a totally different level. And their expectations are at a totally different level. And that's what they choose.
And the comparisons continue. I will say Stillman came in and said, "Hey, Kentucky invests. Why can't Kentucky spend a ton of money on a brand new facility? Why can't Vandy?" Again, if you talk to a Kentucky major about or a Kentucky student at University of Kentucky about sports, you think that conversation sounds the same at all when you talk to a Vandy kid? No, I mean, they're serving their audience, and their audience is a private institute of higher learning that does not, on the whole, to the same level, does not care about football. They're doing exactly what they should.
And another really good question from Will on Twitter says, "I get the money is really good, but why be in the SEC if athletics are not a top priority?" And to which I would say, if I'm in charge of Vanderbilt, it separates us from all the other academic institutions that I'm competing with for student body population, right? Like, I can separate myself from Harvard and Duke and Northwestern or whatever. Like, that's who they compete with for students, is this high-level Ivy League type of student. To compete with Harvard, you can offer them SEC football. You can offer them SEC basketball and baseball championships. That separates you from Harvard.
I would also say, from a business standpoint, why not? You're still getting the checks. You're getting the money. That isn't on Vandy. That's on the SEC. The SEC should figure out a way to get rid of Vandy if they want to. Vandy shouldn't figure out a way to back out of the SEC. That's bad business.
Got
to
prop up the APR, man.
That's,
come on.
That's bad business. Good business, Derek Mason. Absolutely a winner at Media Days. We'll tell you why and what everybody's saying. We'll do that next up on what has turned into an unexpectedly Vandy-heavy edition of Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Hey, Julian Council, I'm in such a giving mood. How do you feel about giving away some
pizza?
Caller number 5-615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. You're going to win a 4-pack of tickets to see the Reds take on the Miami Marlins at the Great American Ballpark Sunday, July 23rd. Game time, 1:10 p.m. Eastern. So 4-pack of tickets to see the Reds and the Marlins, Cincinnati, Great American Ballpark, Sunday, July 23rd. Caller number 5-615-737-1025. There'll be a winner there. I will say that a winner out of SEC Media Days, and we're just sort of trying to unpack everything we saw, and now that we've gotten through all of it, I truly believe that Derek Mason won over so many people in the process of his media days. And the comment was made, I think it was Laura Rutledge that said, "Man, he always wins, but it was different this year. He wanted an even different level this year." And I agree with that. I thought he really – we knew Vandy – they were our highlight going in. We thought they were going to represent themselves incredibly well.
Right.
And they exceeded any expectation I had.
Yeah, I don't – the first one I don't think he won because he came in there and said, "We're going to win an SEC East championship."
Right,
and it kind of made people laugh, and that was kind of silly, and then they didn't play well. But I do think and then he mishandled the quarterback situation, and he hired the wrong offensive coordinator, and he didn't handle the media particularly well. I think what is really cool to see about Derek Mason is, as you've said, I agree, he won all of his press conferences this week in Hoover. His sort of – and I asked him kind of directly to his face, what has been different for you, how you have evolved and changed and grown as a head coach? And it's palpable. Like, you can just listen to the guy talk, and he's more comfortable in his own skin as a head coach. He's more comfortable making decisions about X, Y, and Z, quarterbacks or coordinators or whatever. He is settling in very nicely and is very confident, and I think his one of the biggest changes in Derek Mason is his ability to handle the media. I think he has handled the media so eloquently the last year, maybe less than that, and it's that's the biggest change in him. That's the CEO coming out. Like, he's learning, he's going from coordinator to CEO, and I think he's been brilliant. I think the energy and the palpable and the confident, like, it's palpable. The confidence is palpable. Everything is just – it doesn't mean they're going to be a great team this year. I still think that they're a sixth or fifth place team, that getting to a bowl game is a good expectation. I don't think 7-5 is what they should be shooting for, but they look like they're the most balanced team they've been under Derek Mason. He is clearly a more confident, more polished CEO, and I think that shows a lot of growth on his part, and he's very open about that.
I think one of the interesting conversations in life sometimes is trying to figure out what whatever it, air quotes, is that some people have, and that's not just in sports or entertainment, just in life. Some guys walk into a room and you're like, man, that guy has it. And there's a certain moment when that happens where it feels like there's a level of transparency where you immediately get to know someone. And that's a difficult thing to accomplish. There are certain SEC coaches.
Especially as a coach.
Right. Well, there are certain coaches, though, even if we don't know their results, we feel like they have some it factor. I'll use Brett Bielema as a great example of somebody that you spend 30 seconds in a room with him and you're like, yep, I got it. Coach O, 30 seconds in a room. Yep, I got it. Nick Saban, love or hate the guy, 30 seconds in a room. You feel like you know what the Thanksgiving table would be like. Bill Belichick, obviously the NFL example. You look at all of these things and there's
– onto the mashed potatoes.
Onto the mashed potatoes. There are a ton of guys like that you can look at and say, I get it. The first couple of years for Derek Mason, I think there was a lot of feeling out process. The difference to me this year, and I saw it even last weekend at the MEND event that we were at, the basketball event Jordan Matthews and Shane Foster put on. He was walking around at one point, just meeting fans, and there was just a different – there's a different thing. He's got there's a moment where if you're standing in a bar and you look over and you see somebody, like, you think might be famous, they have just sort of a different swagger, especially in this town. You can be like, that guy's definitely right. – I don't know who that is. He's somebody.
Why does he look poor but looks famous at the same
right,
time?
Right, right, right. Well, Derek Mason, without the looking poor part, right, was definitely that even at the MEND event. And I walked away from his time with us and his time in general at SEC Media Days and I feeling like he's become the type of guy now that if you walked in and you sat down at a bar, you think you could have a drink, you know what he's going to order, and you know what the conversation is going to be.
It's really funny you say that, you bring that analogy into it, because I actually did that the first year he was the head coach. I was at the bar at the hotel at the Hoover Winfrey Hotel, and I'm sitting there waiting to order a beverage, and Derek Mason is sitting there waiting to order a beverage, and it took him 10 minutes to get service because he didn't look like anybody else. He just sort of was like one of the guys sitting there at the table, and they finally get around, and I kind of had a chance to talk to him for a minute or two. So, you know, I was like, this is great. I get my 8 minutes with Derek Mason here, getting to know him a little bit. And there's an airiness to him now. There's a lightness to him that's just sort of – he walks a little – I don't know. It's just – it's fun to see, and I think it's – I like to think that translates into managing a football program better, and I think that he has managed a football program better. Getting to a bowl game is a great step in the right direction. Let's see if he can maintain that. But
here's why I'll say confidently it does manage. It does transfer over. And I'll say this with a ton of confidence based on the chance we had to talk to Odin Burks and Ralph Webb. Because
I think it's the second time you've called him Odin.
What did I say?
Odin Burks, which I think is the guy who Hernandez allegedly murdered.
Yes, that is absolutely.
Although it's Odin Lloyd, I think.
Yeah. My bad.
Oren Burks.
Oren Burks. That is absolutely. I didn't even realize I said that. Yes. My fault, Oren. My fault. You were fantastic. So in talking to them, Ralph Webb said, yeah, there was a moment last year where we bought in about halfway through the season. We asked what the difference is this year and how things feel different. And he said there was a moment last year about halfway through the season where everybody bought in. And we all came together and we said, man, I see it. I understand it. I know what we're going for. And so you start to look at that and say, okay, what I'm seeing right now is players are saying, hey, there was a moment I bought him, which I think gives a coach a little bit of an extra step, right? And then you see the coach with the extra step. I don't know whether the step came first or the buy-in came first, right. But either way, you're seeing a more confident, comfortable in himself, Derek Mason, and you're seeing players talk about how everybody's more confident and they understand toughness and intelligence because they bought into this system, and there's sort of a symbiotic thing. It doesn't mean that the players are necessarily good enough all the time to win,
right.
But it means that everybody's on the same page, and that means something.
No, and I agree. So he was one of the highlights for me, and it's funny you mentioned Coach O, because I think part of the joke around SEC Media Days with Coach O was, oh, he said absolutely nothing this year, so he's a better head coach now. Like, he's learned how to be a head coach because he's learned how to say nothing. He just read his depth chart and was largely unentertaining and wasn't, you know, particularly charming. But it raises an interesting question about Julian Council's first ever experience in Hoover, Alabama. The highlight of the week for Julian Council, was it Sauce Soul Kitchen? Was it getting on SEC Network? Was it saying hello to Coach O? Or hanging out with Laura Rutledge. These are all three big-time accomplishments. I just would like to know what your top experience was.
Sleeping in a hotel bed because my bed here is a rock.
Can't
you do something about that? Can't you get a new mattress?
I can't really afford to do that.
Okay.
I would love to.
All right.
I
thought it was he said Coach O saying hello was his.
You were pretty fangirling over that. That was a pretty big moment for you. When Coach O said hello, did you, Julian Council, respond with "Hey, Coach," or did you respond
or just like "Sup"?
I said "Hey."
Strong. See, this is the sort of analysis you only get on the morning show.
I will say this though: if you're in Birmingham, the food scene in Birmingham is tremendous. By the way, Saw Soul Kitchen, awesome. Go check that out. We had dinner at Highlands. I recommend Highlands Bar and Grill. Can't recommend that enough. It was spectacular. So that was my highlight of the trip.
It was the food. I'm trying.
And
to
Walker
think
Chevrolet got us everywhere we needed to go.
I'm trying to think of one particular highlight that stood out to me. I just think the shows in general were fun because there were so many unexpected moments. But I also think I think that having the moment, the sincere conversation that we were having, I thought. Especially Booger's decision to be so unfiltered was really cool to me, because I think in a lot of worlds, guys like Booger watch what they say. So whether you agree or disagree with the quote that Tennessee football is going to be abysmal, the fact that that environment is so comfortable where you're just feeling like you're talking with friends and you can be that open was sort of an eye-opening experience.
There's a conversation about this event coming to Nashville, and we talked about it yesterday. I don't know how fan-friendly they can make it, and I think that needs to be part of the equation. If they're going to move it around and make it like this traveling circus, then I think you need to sort of figure out a way to incorporate the fans more. But you, as a now media member, did it live up to expectations? Was it different? Was it bad? Was it good? What did you anticipate?
It was about what I anticipated. I will say that, you know, for me, my only other comp experience is I've done Radio Row several times at the Super Bowl. So, like, that's a much different vibe. I liked the fact that it was a little tamer vibe in that sense. Like, I liked the fact that it wasn't.
And you'd love all the other media days in college football.
It wasn't as much of a madhouse as, oh, my God, is that Kevin Costner walking through to promote his new movie?
Like, the ACC media event right now, like, they're all on the golf course at Pinehurst. That's how laid back they are.
Which
at
doesn't.
They're actually at the Westin in Charlotte.
Oh, my apologies.
I've been in Pinehurst in like 3 years.
The Westin in Charlotte. Can we play golf there though? I guess maybe we should go cover
that. The Westin in Charlotte is in uptown Charlotte where there are zero golf courses.
Oh, that's a bummer.
They sit on couches in the Pac-12 like under palm trees, and just hang out. It's very laid back everywhere else.
Well, it was an interesting experience, and I think you guys have convinced me. That I'm the only one that thinks that it wouldn't be as big in any other conference, or not any other conference. I'm the only one that thinks that it's massively huge compared to everybody. I'll have to.
You heard
to
Tony Barnhart.
Right.
Shut you down on that. Right?
I did. I heard Tony Barnhart shut me down. But the conversation about the best conference, I don't think will ever be shut down. A major, massive coach, one of the biggest coaches in all of college football, said something about where his conference ranks. That I don't think most of you guys are going to agree with. You'll hear that next on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. How
do I? You're listening to Braden and Fitz, live from the Game National Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. The sweet, sweet vocals of Boyz II Men can only mean one thing. It's Friday, and it's our last segment of the week.
I don't even know how to talk over this. The Boyz II Men Geico commercial, by the way?
I have not.
Oh, my God.
Maybe I have.
They're like back at a pharmacist, but they're reading all of the symptoms, like could cause this, this, this. But they're singing it imperfect, and it's really spectacular. It's absolutely fantastic.
Internal bleeding.
Yeah, it's all that sort of stuff. So,
that's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. Speaking of ridiculous, but awesome too. I just found out that there's like some big 90s like party thing going on tomorrow. So I can only imagine that my wife is going to be full on, and she is in a you know, she's got a walking boot on, and so
she I don't know if she wants us to release this information, but she did break her foot playing cornhole in a pool.
Yeah, and only Sunny could have that happen. Cornhole in a pool. It's not the funny thing is it wasn't riding the inflatable pole that we have. No, it wasn't that. It was jumping up and down in my face to celebrate a fantastic shot in cornhole. That
props
that.
To your wife for talking trash during cornhole.
Oh,
even in a pool.
My wife is the years ago.
You gotta have low water levels for a good cornhole motion in a pool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's they're actually kind of no. You shoot overhand. You just kind of figure it out.
Like, oh, that's not cornhole.
They're smaller bags, so you shoot them overhand.
See, my in-laws take their cornhole extremely seriously.
Oh, and so do we on the set that we have outside of the pool. But I will say, years ago we were down at Dave and Buster's watching the Raiders play the Browns, and there was this guy behind us the whole time that was just talking trash. And it was back when the Raiders were really particularly bad. And the whole time the guy is just, I hadn't said anything, but I was wearing a Raiders shirt. And the guy was just berating me the entire game. At the end of the game, it was my wife that turned around, started yelling at him, made some inappropriate hand motions.
That's when you knew that you loved her.
Yeah, hand motions, and then stormed out of the bar as we left in celebration. Because the Raiders blocked what should have been the game.
Have you ever had to pull your wife like out of a fight, like hold her back physically from getting into a fight?
No, just the time that I had to keep her from getting into the backseat of a cop car. But I haven't actually had to pull her out of
a fight. Wasn't that at your own house?
Yes. Yeah, it was at a Halloween party.
She almost got into the backseat of a cop car at her own house.
Yeah, well, they said that, you know, they said that it was going to be super. They said we were too loud and you could hear it two blocks away. And my wife was like, I don't believe you. And then the
Let's
cops were like, you want to get in the car? And she's like, yeah, I do want to get in the car, officer. And I'm running up. I'm like, no, we do not.
That's a good idea.
But yeah, she's actually, so I love, I don't know if you've heard of my so-called band, but they do like these awesome 90s covers. Hmm. So it turns out there's a big 90s party tomorrow afternoon. So I can only imagine what happens with
you know you're old when you're like can't wait for that 90s party in the afternoon on a Saturday.
That's fair, but you want to talk 40. About cool people watching. I'm just saying a 90s party is going to have you know, and a little outdoor 90s party action is going to have some. That's going to have some fun stuff.
It'll have a lot of 40-year-olds.
I cannot wait to see where that thing goes. Yeah, and it will have a lot of 40-year-olds. Thank you.
I love the 90s too.
Julian Council,
Julian
Council, would you go to a 90s party?
Yeah.
You were watching The Bodyguard yesterday.
Yeah, I love that.
That's 93.
All right. So. Well, you know,
92, correct.
92. My apologies.
I was born 93, but
I am
Bodyguard
so
is
sorry,
92.
If you're walking around at the 90s party tomorrow and you see somebody with hot pink hair and a boot, that's my wife. So just say hi to her. So a comment
She'll
was
blend
made.
Right in.
Yeah, Jimbo Fisher, head coach of Florida State, has started his, I don't know, is this recruiting? Is this advertising?
Both.
Is this you know, is this wagging his tail around and making sure that he's the big boy on the lawn? I don't know what it is. But this, but we want you to hear it. So this is what Jimbo Fisher had to say about the ACC particularly.
I coached the SEC for 13. I think it's a tremendous conference. I think the Big Ten's a tremendous conference. I think they all are. But I think right now, with what we've accomplished in the last 5 years, you're talking about major wins, big wins, national championships, Heisman Trophy winners, coaches, everything that goes involved, I think the ACC is as good a league as there is in football.
By the way, the ACC commissioner, John Swofford's, spent 27 minutes and 55 seconds exactly singing the praises of the league yesterday in his opening address before taking questions from the media.
If I was John Swofford, I'd be thumping my chest,
it's
too.
It's a little different than the one that Greg Sankey gave where they praise Kentucky for being tolerant and breaking the color barrier in the SEC.
Also important information.
Yes.
50 years. He's big on the history of the league. If I was John Swofford, I would be thumping my chest because I think the ACC, for a lot of reasons off of the field, is securing itself and its future in a really, really big positive way. And a large chunk of that is hiring good coaches. And then the finish off that product is win a Heisman Trophy and the national title. So right now you've got, you know, what, Winston and Lamar Jackson as two Heisman Trophy winners. Deshaun Watson probably should have been one in there in one of those 2 years somehow. You've got the defending national champions and Clemson. You've got rising programs with Miami and Mark Richt, Virginia Tech and Justin Fuente. Louisville, Bobby Petrino's a great coach, despite what everybody thinks of him as a person. And who knows? Paul Johnson, Georgia Tech, decent program there. Good test in week one against Tennessee. Pat Narduzzi and Pittsburgh's got an interesting schedule this year. So there's a really strong middle of the pack in the ACC that's elevating and getting better. If that can continue and the coaching continues to develop, then I think that the ACC is clearly on a path that's closing the gap rapidly between all the leagues. I mean, the Big Ten closed the gap a couple of years ago when it hired Harbaugh and Franklin. The Pac-12 may be the one league that's maybe needs to take the next step. It's their turn maybe at bat. But from a coaching standpoint, the ACC is in great shape and might have the best collection of coaches 1 to 14.
One of the great things about the last segment on Friday is I can sort of just drop a question out there that's a total bomb that we don't have time to really dig into
to stir people up.
But I do have to ask this question because I think Julian makes a great point. 27 minutes and 55 seconds, I think, is what he said. All of thumping his own chest and praising the ACC. Roger Goodell does this all the time at the Super Bowl, right? He goes in and he spends half an hour just bragging about
$400 billion.
Everything the NFL's accomplished. Why is it that we're okay with our leagues standing up and doing that? But when Floyd Mayweather, not a likable human being, I understand that. But in general, when Floyd Mayweather stands up and praises his wealth and all of his accomplishments in boxing, people come around and they just destroy him for, quote, showboating and destroy him for, quote, bragging about his wealth. Like, at some point, isn't that what everybody does at all of these press conferences? Again, Floyd Mayweather, an awful human being that I won't root for in anything that he ever does. But I'm just saying that it's amazing how we turn around and we're like, heck yeah, the ACC, they can thump their chest. They deserve it. It's good. But at the same time, like, where's the line?
I think self-promotion, there's maybe a class that you can have. Like, there's a level of classiness you can have in self-promotion, right? I think that appeals to people versus turns people off, maybe.
Yeah,
that's what it is. And Floyd certainly, and I don't think the least of which is the part that you're mentioning, the fact that this is sort of an awful human being that I'm never going to root for. I think that part of it plays into it as well. John Swofford's a pretty good dude.
Sure. But but we can't deny there's a difference between the way we approach individual athletes in general, not just Floyd, but individual athletes that, you know, brag about their accomplishments or, you know, wear a bunch of chains when they're in a press conference or wear chains on the field. And,
sure,
you know, they got their jewelry and everyone's like, oh, he's flaunting everything he's got. And then you turn around and you watch commissioners and it's again, we hold individual millionaires to a much different standard than we hold groups that are worth billions.
It's hard because boxing is such a self-promotion thing, or just fighting in general is such a self-promotion thing. And I just can't take, like, I don't care what he looks like or what he stands for or what he says. If you have that track record behind you, I'm not going to root for you. So it's hard for me to,
100%. We're on the same page.
You can play in NFL, though.
You know, like, exactly.
But
go with some of the quarterbacks in the NFL. If they were to stand up and if Cam Newton or Big Ben or any of these guys are standing up and just going, like, I'm the greatest in the world or whatever, I think there's a certain level.
We don't mind that from Darrell Revis. We didn't mind that from Deion Sanders. I mean, if you're a cornerback in the NFL, you can thump your chest all day long. Everybody else can't. It's interesting.
Yeah, that's weird. I never thought about that.
It's an interesting.
Corners can do it.
Yeah. I don't know. Derek Mason coming up next. He's a wide receiver. He can.
Maybe it's the hardest position to play. Maybe that's what it is.
Maybe that's what it is. 3D coming up next. I don't know what they're doing. They'll be better than what we just did. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council back there. Windy City intern. Yeah, just absorb that. Thanks for listening to Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Guys, do it again on Monday. We appreciate you.